An innovative landmark a quarter century in the making, the new eastern span of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge represents the latest spectacular chapter in the history of this storied structure. The new bridge's architect, Donald McDonald, has written a new book, Bay Bridge: History and Design of a New Icon, which reveals the design decisions that have shaped the evolution of the bridge over the last century, from the history of the original bridge through the planning of the new span to the construction of its signature 525-foot high white tower. It's a great pleasure to welcome Donald McDonald to the program. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe, and that was a nice introduction to the long history of the bridge.
I appreciate it. I assume that this is something that you, being from San Francisco, that you live with, and at what point do you become a part of its history?
Well, the thing is, I've done a lot of work on the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm the first probably architect since the original designers to work on it, and that got me into long-span bridges, but also I went through the process of how the architect worked with the engineer, and it was pretty interesting because there's a lot of redundant parts on the Golden Gate that make it look pretty. So when I started working on the Bay Bridge, and I'm the only architect to work on it, the new one, and I went back and looked at the history to see how that design evolved and how the West Spans, which is the suspension part, evolved, and I found that the architects, you know, really play a major part. And so when we got the commission to do the new span of the East Bay Bridge, I sort of used that as the background. So from there on, I went with there's redundant parts, and there are many schemes we tried that sort of didn't make it past the peer review panel. But the one that's up now, and they just opened it last Monday to the public, and it's been a great reception for its beauty, and which I'm incredibly pleased. So that gives you a quick synopsis of kind of the background I had before I got into these large bridge spans.
What was needed in the sense of the reason for a new span?
Well, there's a collapse in the Loma Prieta earthquake in 89 when a section of the old bridge, the East Span, which is a cantilevered truss system, one of the sections collapsed, and that section was between the high truss and the low truss, kind of where the forces would be uneven. There was a collapse that would take place. So, and also it was a rolling earthquake, so it had an up and down motion as well as a horizontal motion, and that kind of motion probably hadn't been planned for, and so that's why that part of the deck came down. And then there's so much micro damage done on the bridge, and there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of parts that they decided would be better just to replace the bridge with a new bridge.
It is interesting in reading the book about, you have an entire section on earthquakes and, of course, a way of life in San Francisco, and
right.
It is something that ultimately in your work you have to plan for. So what were you able to do that you feel that perhaps your predecessors and those building these bridges years ago were unable to do?
Well, I think that, you know, the computers have really made it so they can do very intensive studies, and they can mock up the frame of the bridge as you're designing it, and they can shake it in the computer model and see where the weak points are. And the other thing is that in the days of yore, you might say, they only studied earthquakes where they felt they moved back and forth, whereas they actually sometimes move up and down as well. So it's more of a three-dimensional force that goes through. And on the new bridge, it's a suspension bridge, and suspension bridges are more flexible than trusses or cable stays. You know, they're stiffer systems. So like the Golden Gate Bridge rode out the earthquake beautifully. There's a few minor changes on it, but same as the West Span, but the East Span of the Bay Bridge is the part that, the piece that collapsed. So, plus the freeway leading, I think there are like 64 deaths because of that earthquake, because that one freeway sort of pancaked on top of the other part in the Cypress Expressway. And so there's a lot of stuff that we've learned, or the engineers have learned. I mean, I'm an architect. I do more of the shaping of things than the actual engineering, so.
I thought it was interesting in reading the book about the tower. Of course, this is one of the signatures of the new bridge, this 525-foot high white tower. Was that always a part of the design?
Well, the idea in the end, when we went through we had a peer review panel of 21 engineers, architects, planners, and every time we did a design scheme for about a year, we'd go before them and they'd explain why it didn't work or why it worked or what was the best. So a single towered self-anchoring suspension bridge came out of it. So We start off with a square tower, then we made it into two legs and then four, and then I modified the four legs into these pentagons on each of the legs. And what I do is when we work on bridges, we try to take the hardest part to design and design that, and then that sets up the vocabulary for the rest of the bridge. So, and I use things called the golden section and the golden triangle, which are systems developed out of the Renaissance and the rule of thirds. And maybe your audience might not really understand that, but it's a technique if you don't really have a sense of proportion in that, that if you go along these guidelines, you can get, you know, do something that's pretty interesting. I'll give you an example. A lot of photographers that are amateurs will take a photograph and put the horizon in the middle, whereas a professional will usually put a third from the top or a third from the bottom, and that's kind of the rule of thirds. It's more complicated than that, but that gives you an idea. When you do a bridge, it's good to have the deck a third of the height of the tower, like the Golden Gate, whereas the west bands of the Bay Bridge, the deck's in, right in the middle of the tower. So you try to avoid that, and we were able to do that on the new bridge.
You have an illustration in the book which shows the tower and likens it to the Saturn V rocket.
Yeah, what I wanted to do in the public hearings, we had, I think, 26 in all, I didn't really bring that kind of metaphor idea in front of the public because I felt that it might be misunderstood. So, but when architects design things, they look for clues in the environment or like a metaphor. And the bridge is to last 150 years, so I felt that I needed some kind of form that we might see in the next 100 years. It was quite prevalent. So I felt the rocket, you know, space exploration would be a good one. And then when we were designing the tower, I tapered the tower, and the bottom has a big base on it, and that base is to take the biggest impact of a seismic event. And the event, the impact diminishes as you go up the tower. So it sort of takes the shape of a rocket. So I looked at the Saturn and I figured, oh, that's pretty good. So I sort of copied some of the parts of it and brought it into the bridge. There's a solid and voids kind of design relationship. That means a hole and a filled hole. And in that, I wanted to really, you know, sort of mimic the rocket, but not really say much about it.
I thought that the great pains were taken for the environment as well. There were concerns, obviously, about the fish, about the birds.
Right.
And not only during construction, but after the bridge opened, and what kind of, and this surprised me, I found this very interesting, of how much a bridge is a part of the lives of these seabirds.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. In the book, we put stainless steel mesh nets on the inside of the viaducts between the two skyway elements. And in that, we found out on the existing span, there's about 900 nesting cormorants. So in the mitigation of the environmental impact, we sort of, when they take that bridge down, we hopefully they'll move into these new netting platforms. Also, there's a couple of peregrine falcons, and we thought about that, but even below the water, there's a tremendous amount of sea life down there, and there's eelgrass on both ends of the bridge, which are a great fish habitat. But I think what's interesting, I didn't really get into it in the book, but because when they pounded these piles into the mud, there's a lot of vibration that goes through the water. It's like sonic waves, and when those waves are really pronounced, they affect the bladder and the fish, and the bladders blow up, and the fish go to the top and die. So they put what they call bubble curtains around this impacting area, you know, to lessen that shock wave, and it really works. So that's sort of an innovation that was done below the water surface, and I think that was quite innovative.
What do you see the future of this bridge to be?
Well, I think the beauty of the bridge, I mean, one of the key features is that there's two extra lanes in either side of the roadways. In other words, we have five lanes in each direction, and each side of the five lanes we have like a pull-off shoulder about 8 feet, so the old bridge didn't have that, so if a car breaks down in the lane, then it shuts one lane down. And when you have 280,000 cars a day going over the bridge, it really affects the flow. So that's one thing. The other principal thing is we have now a bike pedestrian path that goes from Oakland right to the Yorba Buena Island, and the idea is to eventually get two bike paths on the west bands, and that's something we studied back in 2001. It hasn't been funded yet. So those are the major impacts, plus the big plus, I think, in the end is Oakland or the East Bay will get their own sort of Golden Gate Bridge imagery, and branding the city with this bridge is very important. That's why I picked the color white, because there's these cranes in Oakland that are painted white. And I talked to the people that do the maintenance on it. I said, why did you make them white? And they said, we made them white so if we can see if there's any rusting parts that need to be fixed. Whereas if you paint a dark gray like the existing west band of the bay, you don't really see the rust that easily, so I figured, well, that was a good reason. Plus, being white gives it its own distinction. It works great at night with the night lighting, and in the daytime, the way it picks the shadows up. Whereas if you have a dark-colored bridge, you don't see the shadows so much as you would in a white bridge. So those are some of the basic reasons that that tower, we feel, is important, because it'll brand that part of the world with their own signature bridge.
Donald McDonald is an award-winning architect, the designer of the new east span of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. He was also the first architect to work on the Golden Gate Bridge since its original construction, and author of the book Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon, published by Chronicle Books. I can't wait to get out to the West Coast and see your work and to see this beautiful bridge. I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me, and come on out. You'll enjoy it, especially if you go over at night.
Can't wait. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much. Again, Donald McDonald is an architect and author of the new book, Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon. The book is published by Chronicle. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.